Hi, I'm Richard, the founder of 10 Adventures, and this is the 10 Adventures podcast. Each week, we talk to real people about real adventures as they explore this incredible planet we all live on.
Today on the 10 Adventures podcast, we have our third and final installment of talking with Karen about her recent bike touring that started in France, went through northern Spain, and then down through Portugal. And today we're going to talk about her experience cycling south from Santiago de Compostela in Portugal, which if you followed along on social media, she had an absolutely incredible time. Hi, Karen. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. I'm back in Canada and kind of feeling a bit of the post-trip blues as we have a deluge of rain and dark skies blowing through. But alas, I won't bore you with that, Richard.
Now, actually, what's interesting is you've come back and now there's been enormous storms throughout kind of, you know, the coastal BC all the way through the mountains to the Rockies, where most of the highways are now closed. And parts of near where you are, you know, the highways are underwater. So you've gone from, you know, sunny blue skies to really just an epic deluge. So it must be a big change for you coming off of, what was it, 2 months of riding almost every day?
Yeah, big change for sure. It makes me appreciate the weather where we were and makes me appreciate how mild our rain days were. By comparison, things that we said, oh, rain day, we're not going to ride. If we were here, we'd be like, this is fantastic.
So before we talk about your trip, I'm always interested, you know, when you were finishing up in Lisbon, were you ready to finish? Were you ready to be done your trip or could you have kept on going? Were you really kind of just hitting your stride?
It's kind of hard to say because there's a part of you mentally that starts to wind down for a trip. It's almost like you're preparing for it. My husband was definitely ready to be done and to go home, although now he's kind of wishing he wasn't in that mindset because now he wishes he was back cycling. But I think if there was like more to do, like because we were ahead of schedule, so we were kind of filling time at the end because we ended up finishing things quicker than we had the time planned out for. We weren't really sure how long it was going to take. But if there was more to do and the weather was good, I probably could have kept going.
It's funny that I have the same way. Some trips I'm ready to be done. And then as soon as you're back, you're like, why did I want to come home? Like, that was great. And other times you're like, oh, I don't want to have to go back. And especially this being kind of your first big trip after the pandemic, I was interested if you know, were hitting your stride or you just kept wanting more. Let's talk about Portugal because this seemed to be a part of the trip that you really enjoyed. Can you maybe just in a big picture describe the route you took? When we last talked to you, you were, just leaving Santiago de Compostela in Spain.
We were heading south from Santiago, which is on the western coast of Spain, and we were heading south, and there's lots of routes you can take. Our kind of overall plan was to initially follow the Camino Portugués, but as you know, there are multiple routes for the Camino Portugués. It's not one route, it's many options. And we had both enjoyed cycling along the coast of France so much that we really wanted to cycle along the coast of Portugal as much as we could. So that was our plan. We cycled south out of Santiago and started. We had to go south before heading to the coast. We had our first night after Santiago in Vigo, which is quite a big town on the coast in that southern part of Spain, just close to the border with Portugal.
How much did you know about the route you were going to do? You've hiked the Camino Portugués, but there's several different routes. The route that you chose, was this something that you'd done part of, or was it all entirely new?
Well, that is a good question. So there are multiple routes to do the Camino Portugués. And a few years ago, I hiked it with my sister-in-law, and we chose the central route. And we chose that one because of the amount of time she had, because the coastal route, you require a little bit more time. It's a little bit longer. And it seemed to be kind of the more popular one. When we were going to bike it the other way, we kind of wanted to stick more to the coast. Now, we did have a bit of a hiccup as we got going, because after Vigo, that was where the coastal route for us was really going to start. And the next day, the plan was that you cycle a small road all along the coast to a point where you have to get a ferry to cross the Minho River and enter Portugal. So that was going to kind of be our first coastal day. And as we were kind of looking for the ferry route or the ferry timing the night before, we found out that the ferry was broken and it wasn't working. And so we would have to cross the river somewhere else. Now, this is where my experience before hiking it came into play, because I knew there was a very big kind of famous Camino Portuguese bridge between Tui in Spain and Valença. So we kind of backtracked and head south from Vigo instead of along the coast and cross that bridge from Tui into Valença. Actually, it turned into an amazing day, because after Valença, there's actually a bike route all along the Minho River, like a strictly cycle path, all the way out to the coast to Camina. It was like really fantastic. And then once you hit that coast, so that's after the Minho River, you're just cycling along the sea for so much of the time. It's just kind of small road or bike path. And I mean, you're heading inland periodically, but it's really remarkable how much time you do spend by the sea.
I just have a quick question about riding along the sea. So I've been in, you know, the Italian lakes. I've done a lot of time in Liguria and the Côte d'Azur along the Mediterranean. And it's always been just a nightmare of traffic. You know, there's the autostrads, the paved roads, there's also lots of little small roads, and they're just consistently jammed with traffic. And so you've kind of spent all this time along the Atlantic coast. Is there any similarity in traffic levels? Like when you talk, I always just think back to what I experienced, where I just think these would be terrible. You know, some of these routes in kind of Italy and southern France would be terrible for bike touring. Is it like that at all anywhere that you were riding, or were you able to consistently find like really quiet roads or bike only trails?
It's a mix. It's a mix. So that part, when you're first entering Portugal in the north along the coast there, that is a lot of quiet roads and mixed in with some bike paths. So it was pretty cycling friendly. But as you get further south, and that would be more south of Porto, there is more sections that are more difficult. Now, the thing is, I had heard before, like years ago, that cycling in Portugal, because that's, I think, officially the Eurovelo 1 there, it can be troublesome because sometimes it'll take you into a route where that it doesn't exist. And interestingly, I met a woman on Instagram who was like a few weeks ahead of me. So she would always send me messages with tips. So I know there was one tip and one section, she was like, whatever you do, don't follow the bike route on this section because you end up in an apocalypse-like area. You know, and so, I mean, there were some sections where you'd end up on a busier road, but a lot of it was quiet roads, you know, with a little bit of traffic, or, you know, or a bike path.
That sounds really nice, because even though I do a lot of riding, I find if I'm around a lot of traffic, I lose, you know, you lose the kind of the enchantment of riding if there's, you know, semis speeding by, knocking you around. Whereas when you're on a quiet road, it's just such a nice way to travel. I interrupted you. We were back up. You were just coming into Portugal. Continue.
Well, I mean, pretty much the cycle down from the border to Porto, it was beautiful, like really, really nice. And the day coming out of Porto, down the coast onto this tip of land where we took a ferry to Aveiro, that was a really fantastic day as well. And then after Avero, there was some bad weather coming, so we kind of veered inland a bit to keep our options open. The one day that my Instagram friend warned me about, we did do that day, and it wasn't the best day, that's for sure, but we made it. So, and it's funny, you talk about like being on a road that's busy with traffic and how that kind of is distracting. And I must say, I think I'm the same way. I find, so what I found helped was I would have one headphone in.
I do the exact same thing.
And I either have a story playing, you know, from an audiobook, or else I listen to music. And then I feel like it helps me ride better because I'm like not flinching so much every time a semi passes me.
I literally do the exact same thing. I bought those little Apple AirPods just so I could put it in one ear, let the other ear stay open to hear stuff, and yeah, just try and distract me from like cars going by and just kind of being stressed out. So you went down past Porto, you went inland. Now I've heard the route from Porto to Lisbon, some people have said that's not like, it's kind of this a bucket list trip ride from Lisbon to Porto or vice versa. People said that's not the best part of riding in Portugal. What did you think? You know, you just did that ride.
Well, I didn't do the whole part of that because we made it from Porto down to Figueira da Foz and then over to Coimbra. And then we had kind of 4 or 5 days of rain that blew in. So we changed gears then. I can't really comment on that section too much because what we had inland to Coimbra so that when the rain came, we could either get a train or rent a car. That's actually what we did. It was forecast for 5 days of rain. So we spent one rain day in Coimbra and then we rented a car and drove down to the Algarve. My thinking was when the rain stopped, I wanted to be in a place that was warm and sunny. So we head down to the Algarve and stayed a couple of days in Lagos.
No, I went to the Algarve 20 years ago, and this time it was, you know, late October, early November, and it was kind of eerie because it's a really popular summer resort with beautiful beaches, and like I remember there's just lots of British pubs everywhere. Was it similar now that it was kind of like a, you know, a seaside vacation resort that had kind of largely closed for the season, or were there still lots of tourists there and it kind of had a bubbling vitality?
There was quite a few tourists there. I mean, to be honest, that was the first place that really felt like a tourist destination, you know, because for the whole rest of the trip, we're more in small places. But like in Lagos, you heard a lot of different languages on the streets and there were a lot of Brits there. And there weren't too many things that were closed yet at that point.
What was riding in the Algarve like?
So we'd previously done a bike trip cycling in the Algarve. So our aim wasn't to cycle along the southern part of the Algarve. Our aim was to cycle the Alentejo, where the Algarve changes into the Alentejo along the coast going up towards Lisbon. We cycled north from Lagos, heading for the coast, and then traveling north along the coast there. I was interested in that area because I knew that was a reasonably popular hiking trail. It's called the Road of Vicentina, and it's a long-distance hiking route that kind of follows the coast, kind of going overland, over cliffs and down to beaches, and I'd heard a lot of good things about it. My goodness, it was really incredible. I mean, I wasn't walking it, so I didn't get those, you know, views for the whole day. I would just be popping on and off to the beach, you know, on the roads. But it was really impressive there. And for the most part, you know, quiet roads and yeah, very, very pretty there.
So what made it so different? You know, looking on a map here, it looks similar to, you know, the rest of kind of the coast of Portugal. Was it just that, you know, there doesn't appear to be, you know, there's a park there, there's not as many towns, but, you know, what made the Road of Vicentina so special?
All the towns along that coast are pretty small. I think what was different is the other beaches we've been along were very long white sand beaches. So I'm not complaining, you know, please don't misinterpret what I'm saying. But on that southern coast, it's just like a ton of big cliffs, you know, so you'd be standing up high on a cliff looking down onto a beautiful beach. And I think it was just that contrast there. And also that all the towns are very small. And yeah, it was just really pretty. I would definitely consider walking that at some point, because there was a remarkable number of people hiking it too. That was the other thing, is that all these little towns, like there was a lot of people still staying there, because the accommodation in all these little towns are definitely lower, like they're small little places, you know, they're Mrs. Smith, who's opened, you know, a 10-room kind of hotel, rural hotel where she houses people type of thing. But there were quite a few walkers. Like we'd see a bunch of people getting up and walking out of the accommodation, you know, on their day's walk.
You know, it's interesting as you're talking about the beaches there. I was just searching on Google Maps and looking at the beaches, and you're right, they're all kind of like beaches surrounded by cliffs. And it reminds me a little bit of some of the walking in southern England where you're going over hills.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about that. I haven't walked there.
But there's a big difference. In southern England, you're often dealing with a bit of rain, where I'd imagine the weather in this part of Portugal in November was much more pleasant than, you know, blustery and 8 degrees Celsius. I'm sure you had much nicer weather, but it looks actually really beautiful just looking at these beaches, and they look, you know, kind of very romantic almost in that, you know, this little tiny beach surrounded by cliffs and a staircase down. It looks really fun.
Yeah. And also, like, I was amazed. Like, I kept saying to my husband, like, I can't believe it's the beginning of November and people are walking in t-shirts and shorts. Like, you know, it was crazy.
Well, you know, it's always been strange to me. I know a lot of these kind of southern European, you know, outdoor destinations like in Spain, Portugal, Greece, they kind of closed down at the end of October. But I remember talking to somebody in Athens last year, and in December it was 28 degrees Celsius. And, you know, for some reason we say, oh, well, it's getting to be their off season, let's not go. But, you know, going, and it's 15 degrees Celsius in November, let's say it's not as hot as you had, but even that is really nice weather. And a lot of these places, you know, it's you know, almost extending beyond the shoulder season now. It's not like, oh, I'm going to go September, October, but November's now becoming a time to go. And it's not April or May, but it's, you know, starting in March, that just with kind of the way the weather's changing, it seems that, you know, you have even a longer shoulder season to explore these incredible destinations. And when you go in these times of year, there's even fewer people. So it's a great time for discounts and to save a little money.
Yeah, for sure.
You ride up from Lagos, going through on the road of Vicentina, does this take you all the way to Lisbon, or, you know, do you have to take another path on your way up?
I mean, the road of Vicentina, that kind of general area ends, I'm pretty sure, around Sines. I don't know how to say it in Portuguese. And then we kept going north from there to this beautiful, beautiful beach in Comporta. And Comporta is, there's this tiny inlet of land coming up from the south that sticks out just before you hit the greater Lisbon area. And I mean, it was phenomenal. We had a sunny, warm day and we just kind of sat on this beach, and there was all those, you know, in the tropics, they have those, you know, palapas, those kind of umbrellas made out of leaves. Like there was a bunch of those on a beach by a bright blue beach hut. And of course it was closed because it's not suntanning weather when we were there, but it was kind of fun to sit there with our bikes, you know. I mean, there were some people swimming, but I wouldn't have. It was pretty fun. And then we took a ferry from that little tiny kind of projection of land to Setúbal, which is a big municipality right by Lisbon. So that was kind of cool. All these boat transfers kind of make everything more fun.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. It's kind of fun when you get to do something like that. And then, you know, looking here on the map from Setúbal into Lisbon, it's pretty much humanity nonstop. Did you ride all the way to Lisbon, or did you just get on a train to do that last little run in?
We did it by train because as you mentioned, it's just nonstop humanity. And I don't love that kind of riding. And having said that, we met a Finnish guy who was coming the other way, and he rode all through Setubal, and he said it was fine. And when we were doing our research, because we to do the Portugal part of this trip, we had to do a lot of research every day. There are some what look to be some amazing rides from kind of central Setubal out towards the west through a park. We saw a lot of people on ride with GPS were doing that route, so figured it must be pretty popular.
So in looking back on your your time in Portugal, it sounds to me like this Rota Vicentina hiking trail that you cycled around sounds like a real highlight. And then also you did the coastal route, and it seems like that was a real highlight for you as well. You know, if someone's thinking of going to do something in Portugal, are those two places that like you'd say, hey, you should really check these out amongst your first trips? Or do you think kind of the standard Portuguese Camino or your time cycling in the Algarve, do they compare to these two routes you did this time?
No, I think the two that we did this time were better. So, for example, I did the Central Camino Português several years ago, and I kind of said, oh, wow, like I wish I'd done the Coastal Camino Português, because, I mean, you're just walking by the ocean like endlessly, like, and there's a lot of boardwalks there for the walkers. Even on our bikes, we were on the boardwalks sometimes. So, you know, like they've really taken care of that part of the trail. So yeah, those are definitely two highlights. The other thing we did that was really cool, again, because we are ahead of schedule, is we cycled from Lisbon out to this coastal resort area called Cascais. So that's kind of west of Lisbon. And then and that ride, a lot of it's on a bike path because Lisbon has this long seaside bike path for much of it. But then from Cascais, there's this other ride that's really popular. Again, we found it a lot on Ride with GPS, and it goes all along the west coast of that part of the country up and then over to Sintra, you know, which is a famous tourist site, and then around and back down. So it was a day loop ride. And we left our bags at our accommodation and did that without panniers. And that was really pretty because it's a long climb uphill, but it's really, really well graded and it's good quality pavement. So except for one place, we made a mistake. Our route on Ride with GPS told us to go straight, but it looked like it was a do not enter area. So we turned to the right and had a very steep and lengthy cobblestone ride. And let me tell you, uphill steep on cobblestones is not fun. So I said to my husband, we're sticking to the route from here on in.
That's been nice taking the panniers off for a ride. Was it a big difference, or your body kind of just gone accustomed to the panniers and you didn't really notice a difference when you took them off?
I didn't notice a huge difference, but I think if we had done that long climb with panniers, I would have. So I think I didn't notice a huge difference, but there was, because it was a long climb.
So reflecting back on this, you know, this pretty epic bike tour, what are some things that, you know, stick in your mind as great memories or things that, you know, you're taking from spending this much time just cycling across this pretty part of Western Europe?
I think the biggest thing is I just love the mindset when you're on a long trip like this, like the mindset where your mind is just so focused on what you're doing, you know, like you're very present. You're not thinking about what happened 4 weeks ago or who said something rude to you a month ago. And you're not really thinking about where you're going to be in a month too much because you got too much to plan for today and tomorrow. So it feels kind of like Buddhist to me, you know, like you're really focused on now and all of your mind is busy doing stuff for right now, whether it's the cycling or whether it's like, are we turning left here? Are we not? You know,
I think a big part is just like you're seeing new things. You're coming into a new village or a new town. You're trying to find, okay, do we want to have a place to eat? You're looking at the architecture, you're getting a feel. And so I just find it's really engaging and, you know, kind of being present. Yeah, you're trying to figure out what you're doing, but then it's just, there's no need to think about the future or the past because what you're doing at that moment is so interesting and engaging anyways.
Oh yeah, totally, totally. But I like the way that that mindset feels, you know?
I definitely know that. I would love to do a long trip like that. I've still got three little kids, so we can't do that just yet, but I'm counting down the years until that becomes a possibility. Because it does seem, you know, it would be nice to get back to that.
It's the same mindset with backpacking, though, too, right? Like, you know, you're walking, you're planning where you're going to camp, you're putting up your tent, like, you're just totally living in the now. I really like that.
And then thinking back, anything you'd change? Like, did any of your gear not work? Did any of your decisions, you're like, oh, I wish we hadn't done that? Or did kind of, you know, I know you don't plan too much in advance, but did you feel like everything kind of worked out pretty well?
It worked out pretty well. We both had new bikes that were kind of upgrades from our previous bike trips, and they were stupendous. We probably brought too much. We had to send two boxes home, which is funny. Like, I've done a lot of bike tours and I backpack, so you think I'd have this all dialed in, right? Like, still, we sent two boxes, mailed them home from France and from Spain. And probably I could have got by with even sending even more home, you know, like there were a couple shirts I never wore. So like, why was I carrying them 2,500 kilometers, right? Because the other thing is like, you can go with too little and then buy stuff when you're there, right? It's not like you're remote, like when you're backpacking, right?
I think you actually told me that years ago, and I've really, you know, I'm the same way. I often take too much, but over the last couple of years, really been trying to like, do I need this? And we were backpacking this summer and I went without a cooker. And I know everyone thought, oh, you're crazy not having a stove and fuel, but it seemed to work out. And, you know, just looking at, you know, there's always stuff that you don't need in the end. But yeah, I've done many, many trips where I'm looking for the post office after 1 week trying to send a bunch of useless junk in my pack home.
Yeah. The other thing that really struck us is if you're following pre-established route for bike touring, it just takes a lot of decisions out of the way. So when we were in France, we were following the Eurovelo 1, and that was just so easy. You know, it's so well signed, it's really well maintained, you know, it was just spectacular. And then when we were doing Northern Spain, we were on the Camino and we had a GPS track that we got from a Cicerone guide on cycling the Camino that we used. And again, like, it took any kind of guesswork or logistical troubles out of that. But once we were in Portugal, we had to figure out each day ourselves. So that was a bit more work. So having a route helps.
Definitely. So you're back in Canada. Are you excited for your next adventure? Was it comfortable doing this one? Or are you going to go on another one soon? And if so, where?
Oh, this one was very comfortable. And also, like, traveling for the first time after COVID, you know, or not after, but since COVID started. I mean, it was a good area to be in, to kind of get used to how things are going to be. As far as our next trip, our plan, like, we've used our points to book a flight to South America, but with the pandemic, one thing I've learned is I got to stay flexible. So we'll see if that happens or not.
That sounds fun. Well, thanks for sharing these three podcasts, sharing these kind of, you know, I know at the start you didn't really have a plan and it turned out kind of three separate trips where we contacted you. It kind of came in kind of naturally, three very different trips that took you along the French coast, along the Camino Frances, and then down through Portugal. I've enjoyed listening to them. I know we've had some comments from others that have said they found it really interesting. So we didn't plan this. When you first went away, we just thought, okay, well, we'll just, you know, I'll do the podcast without a co-host. But, you know, it's been nice to check in, and excited that you're back now so I can have you as the co-host on the upcoming podcast. We have some really interesting guests coming up here in November and December.
Yeah, I always love talking to all the interesting people we get to talk to. So I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot of fun just hearing people that are doing kind of these incredible journeys and exploring the world and, you know, living a really adventurous life. So it's one of the best parts of my job. Now, I've said this before, but if you want to follow Karen and see lots of her photos and what's going on, she's on Instagram at Adventure After All. And I know for myself, when it was cold and snowy here, looking at sunny beaches in Portugal definitely made me want to get on a plane and head out there toot sweet. I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to follow that. And we're coming back next week with another exciting podcast with a new guest. So tune in next week. Bye, Karen.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the 10 Adventures podcast. If you liked it, why not give us a review? Better yet, subscribe and get inspired again and again. Also, if you want to find your own adventures, why not check out 10adventures.com, where you can use our free resources to plan your own trip or book a tour in over 60 countries and make your own epic memories on your next adventure.